I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Welcome to Light Up Your Security, a Cybercrime Magazine podcast series brought to you by Simulate, the developers of a breach and attack simulation platform that enables companies to challenge, assess, and optimize their cybersecurity posture against threat evolutions simply and continuously. To learn more about Simulate, visit simulate.com. Joining me today is Manny Barzilai, cybersecurity expert and entrepreneur. Welcome, Manny. So happy to have you with us today.
I'm very happy to be here today.
So, Manny, I'd like to start off by asking you about cybersecurity crisis management. So we're here today to talk about cybersecurity risk management. So how is cybersecurity crisis management different from day-to-day cybersecurity management?
So that's a very good question. I think that the day-to-day cybersecurity management, as complex as it is, has some advantage over crisis management, which is usually cybersecurity people will deal with cybersecurity issues. But during a crisis management, the organization has to face many different challenges that sits in many different domains. So it's a multidisciplinary problem. You don't have just to take care of cybersecurity issues. You also have to take care of public relations and legal and regulations and insurance-related issues and negotiation and sometimes human resource and physical security and many different things at the same time. So you have questions like, do I have to notify my customers? Do I have to notify the regulators? What is the best way to notify the regulator? Should I notify the police? In what cases I can use the notification to the police to postpone my notification to the customers? How should I work with my insurance company? Should I ask them to be involved in the crisis or not? And many, many, many different challenges and questions that sits outside the comfort zone of the technological people and the CISO. So it's a multidisciplinary problem, as I said, and it requires a multidisciplinary response.
Excellent. Thank you. And of situations you've seen in the past, many as a CISO, a researcher, or consultant, what are the primary sources for damages during a crisis? And thinking like, you know, financial, reputational, there's so many different types. And in addition to that, can you share a couple of examples for our listeners?
Yeah. So again, great question. It's interesting to discover that most of the damages that organizations experience during crisis do not come from the incident itself directly. It's not the downtime of the systems, and it's not sometimes the ransom that you pay the hacker, and it's not even the amount of money you pay for the IR team. It's everything else, those indirect damages. It's the fines that you get from the regulators or the entire investigation process of the regulators that requires a lot of your attention and time and effort. It's the class actions. So people sue you, your customers sue you, your partners sue you, sometimes your shareholders sue you. It's the fact that you lose key clients and you are unable to bring new clients. You have to postpone key projects. Your risk appetite goes down. And so many different things that happen during crisis. And those are the main driver. This is the main driver for damages. In that sense, it is very, very, very important to remember that the way you manage the crisis have a dramatic effect on the outcome of the crisis. Many of the damages that are inflicted on organizations, the source of which is the fact that the crisis itself was managed poorly. And during crisis, you have to face hundreds of decisions and challenges. And each and every one of them, if not addressed correctly, has the potential to cause huge damages. So it might be like, a famous incident that I like to discuss is the one very famous company, never mind, was already published, but it was a very famous company that it actually happened several times, but one very famous case where a company tried to hide the incident. And there are many ways in which companies try to hide an incident. Either they try to play it down and say, well, it wasn't really an incident. It wasn't really something that we should discuss. It was just something that we see on a daily basis. They either try to play it down to the point where they don't even notify the public about it, or when they do notify, they try to play it down, and then they receive a lot of heat from people, from the media, from the regulator, and so on and so forth. But in other more creative situations, you see that the company is trying to hire the hacker to transform this case from a cyber incident to a consulting process. So now you have the hacker contacting the organization saying, well, I stole all your information. Either you pay me or I will publish it outside. And the organization goes, well, thank you so much for helping us improve our security. We would be more than happy to keep on continuing receiving your services. We would be more than happy to hire you. And inside this hiring process, you have to sign this NDA and this contract. And many hackers actually do that. They also play this game. And this is obviously a very, very big mistake. Trying to hide an incident almost always blow up in your face. So definitely don't do that.
Interesting. I'm glad that you, thank you for sharing that. That's a really great example. And so within all of your different roles of cyber, you know, do you often hear a lot of statements such as, oh, you know, we assumed, or we hadn't thought, or chances were low, or well, not that impact, and any other expressions implying that cybersecurity related decisions are mostly hypothetical?
Well, you know, so the quick answer is definitely yes. But in our world, there's a lot of risk management and a lot of maybes and possible. And it's true that in many cases, people use that more than they should in cases where you can actually get empiric data, where you can actually go and do the work and get information about those claims. People, because it's probably much easier just to throw maybes to the air, just choose that course of action. But generally speaking, there is a limitation to what we can actually achieve and the amount of knowledge that we can actually accumulate. And a lot of the things that security leaders must do is based on risk management, which means we're trying to evaluate what are the chances for things to happen. And again, nobody knows. We try to also discover the unknown. And we know that there are a lot of things that we don't even know that we don't know. So yes, so the quick answer again is yes, more than I hoped to hear, but in some cases I accept that as something that you cannot avoid.
Sure, that makes sense. So it seems like from what I'm hearing from you, that the first step in crisis management is not getting there, and that could be obvious to others, but nevertheless, that the industry is built on the principle that defenders are always a step behind the threat actors. So in your view, can you continuously automate offensive testing? Can that change the status quo?
So I've said that many times before, much before having this specific interview. I think the future of cybersecurity is in automation. Definitely everything that brings automation to the table is a good thing. And I think everybody should implement and everybody should try to figure out how they can incorporate such technologies in their security environment. Definitely continued scanning of your vulnerabilities, trying to automate the penetration testing process is a very, very important task. And I said it before and I'm saying it again now, this is definitely in some cases a game changer. Definitely something that organizations should consider implementing.
Excellent. And Manny, how do you see the baseline provided by security posture validation tools? And I'm thinking, including penetration maps, optimization of security controls, SIEM integration, patching plans. How do you see these providing for more educated, fact-driven cybersecurity-related decisions? And will two questions in one, I guess. And will it help organizations better prepare or even avoid crisis situations?
So I agree with what you've said before. Definitely, the best way to handle a crisis is not being in crisis and avoiding it to begin with. And one of the challenges that we have today in the cybersecurity world is how to make data-driven decisions. It's very hard to find the right data sources to use for making, I think, intelligent decisions on what are our problems, where we should focus on, how we should use our resources, and so on and so forth. And I think that those type of controls and those type of activities could significantly improve organizations' ability to understand their security posture in almost real time or as close as possible to reality. It's true that those controls are not the full picture, and there are other things that should be accompanied and other parameters to discuss. But I think that every time that we can use something which is almost in real time and give us an accurate understanding of our security posture, this is something that we should hug and love and incorporate into our decision-making process, and definitely use that when we're trying to devise our multi-year strategy.
Fantastic. Well, Manny, thank you so much for coming onto the show and sharing your expertise and your insights with us. This was a great episode, so it was really nice to be speaking with you.
Thank you so much. It's been my absolute pleasure, and I hope to talk to you again.
I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Light Up Your Security is brought to you by Simulate, the developers of a breach and attack simulation platform that enables companies to challenge, assess, and optimize their cybersecurity posture against threat evolutions simply and continuously. To learn more about our sponsor, Simulate, visit simulate.com. And you can listen to all of our podcast episodes at cybercrime.radio.